Jones, you may go forward. Before you begin, counsel, please be mindful that we have reviewed everything you have filed and have also reviewed the applicable case law. So please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, I am John Jones for the Commonwealth. On the search issue, the extent of Brenda's authority, Collins's mother, it really governs this search issue. The circuit court erred by finding that her consent was effective for the room but not for the bag. There was nothing to distinguish her authority over the bag from her authority over the room, so that that distinction with no justification in the record is really where the circuit court erred as far as the propriety of the search goes. On the standing issue, the circuit court erred by finding that Collins had standing to challenge the search because she didn't have a sufficient expectation of privacy in the bag and never claimed an interest. She never claimed that it was hers. So her ability to challenge its search is foreclosed. But even if the court is not inclined to find that she didn't have standing, I think that the search was clearly reasonable under this court's case law and just under the Fourth Amendment. The Glenn versus Commonwealth case that both parties briefed pretty extensively is very factually similar to this case. I would note that the distinction, the biggest distinction between that case and this one, seems to be that in Glenn there was there's some language in Glenn about acknowledging that the officer didn't know that the backpack in Glenn was the property of the homeowner, but it also
Mr.
didn't
Jones,
know.
Mr. Jones, I hate to interrupt you so early in your argument. This is Judge Malvo. Quick question about the Glenn matter. In Glenn, essentially what the court is using to determine whether the officers had the right to search the bag was the apparent authority of the grandfather. Clearly that seems factually distinguishable from what we have here, where it's your argument that it's a blanket grant of searching the home. How do you indicate that Glenn is dispositive or helpful for your position?
Well, Your Honor, it's a very factually similar case where you've got a room that the house guest has certain rights over in both cases, and an unmarked backpack with nothing to indicate ownership of the backpack.
Right,
and
but
a homeowner
let me stop you to address the specific issue of apparent authority, which is what Glenn actually specifically turns on, that the grandfather apparently had. There's no indication that he didn't have apparent authority to grant the search of the bag. So was apparent authority argued in this case below?
The circuit court's holding, I think, imports an implicit finding that she had either actual or apparent authority over the room, and that apparent authority has to extend to the bag where there's nothing to distinguish it from her authority over the room. So I think that Glenn does support our position in this, and I guess the most straightforward way that I can think to put it is that that Brenda had authority over the room. There's a nondescript bag. She says it's not hers, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have authority over it.
Let me stop you. This is Judge O'Brien. Mr. Gilbert, let me just stop you there for one second and ask, before the officer searched the backpack, didn't Mr. Moore tell him that it was his backpack?
Your Honor, my reading of the record was, I know that his statement that Moore had claimed the backpack occurred before his description of his search of the backpack in the appendix.
Yes,
but my reading of that was that as far as the time order of things, it seemed like he was going back to describe that he found the backpack, he searched the backpack, and then he went out and asked the people on the porch whose it was the way that I understood that order of events to have occurred in.
Okay, and that's from the officer's testimony that's included in the appendix?
Yes, Your Honor, and if I can have just a moment to run that down. Okay, so that's in the 55 in the appendix. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's okay. That's okay. That's a good start.
Okay, yes, Your Honor. So he was in his testimony, he says on page 55 that he located a blue backpack beside the baby's crib. And then he asked whose backpack it was, and Moore spoke up and advised that it was his. But then over on page 56, the first question at the very top on line one says, so before you went and talked to them, what did you find anything in the bathroom in the backpack? And he says, yes, I observed a hypodermic needle inside of it. I unzipped the main top of the bag and so forth. So it appears from that testimony that before he ever went and talked to them on the porch that he had already searched the bag.
Okay.
So thank you for that clarification, though, Your Honor. And
sure.
But yes, so again, the issue here is whether Brenda had authority, whether apparent or actual, over the bag. And Glenn, that question turned on joint access and control, and that is the issue for finding authority here. And Brenda had joint access or control over the room, and so she also would have joint access and control over a nondescript, unclaimed bag laying in the room. Your Honor, and if I could contrast it to in United States versus Ross, I know that the factual situation in that case was very different from this, but the court talked about how the Fourth Amendment rejects these nice distinctions whenever there's a lawful search going on of a fixed premises, that we don't make nice distinctions over closed containers that are in that premises. Unless there's something to heighten its protection. And here there's just nothing to heighten the protection of the backpack over the protection that's granted to the room. So I don't think there's any evidence in the record that would support a finding that the backpack was more protected than the room itself was. You know, the court got in.
Mr. Jones, let me interject. This is Judge Malvo in reference to the Ross opinion and her argument. Is it distinguishable that in this case versus Ross that there is a statement made by the mother, Brenda, that the bag does not belong to her?
I don't believe so, again, Your Honor. And Brenda's ownership of the bag is not dispositive here. The question is whether she has joint access and control over the bag. And
right. Is there any underlying proof of the joint access? I agree that it's not just the ownership, but is there anything that supports the joint access?
Yes, Your Honor. It's lying in the floor of a room that Brenda had joint access or control over. If the trial court had found that she didn't have joint access or control over the room, then it would have said that she didn't have authority to consent to a search of the room. But that wasn't what the trial court held. It held that she did have authority to consent to a search of the room. So that authority under Ross, I think, necessarily extends to this just nondescript closed container lying in the floor of this room that she has authority over. So, you know, the trial court got into this hypothetical about a locked safe that was in the floor of a house guest's room that the homeowner consents to search that room, and whether that consent would also cover the safe. And Your Honor, I think that perhaps the trial court had an answer in mind for that, that perhaps it wouldn't, that would be a ridiculous proposition, but the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness, and it's a fact-specific inquiry. And so if this were a safe rather than a backpack, it would depend on whether the safe was locked, whether the safe was closed, and perhaps even further, whether the homeowner knew the combination, or if the owner of the safe had kept that secret from them. And so it goes back to, at the heart of it, whether the officer acted reasonably and understood was reasonable in his understanding that Brenda had that authority to consent to the search of the backpack. And just one more thing that I would note is that that the White versus Commonwealth and Commonwealth versus White, the subsequent opinion, unfortunately, the Supreme Court did not resolve that on the merits. But I do think that it's helpful to note that to the extent that this court's opinion in White is somewhat factually similar to what we have in front of us in this case. In that case, though, there was a crucial distinction, I think, that even if that is good law, that in that case, the person who gave consent to search the hotel room said, that bag is the defendant's. And in this case, and so the officers had reason to believe that he had a reasonable expectation of privacy in that bag and searched it anyway. Here what we have is an unclaimed backpack. Even after she's arrested and gives a statement, she does not claim that it's her backpack, Collins. But at any rate, the officers may not have, they had reason to believe that it wasn't Brenda's, but they knew that it was in her house, and they had no reason to believe that it was Collins's. And so that would be the biggest distinction, or a crucial distinction, I feel like, that we need to make between White and this case.
Mr. Gilbert, may I interrupt you again for just a moment? It's Judge O'Brien. My question is about this consent. Is your understanding that it was a blanket consent to search the house, or it was a consent to search when they were looking for her daughter, the defendant?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that this was a blanket consent to search the house. And again, the trial court found that the consent covered the room, and the search of the room was occurring after they had already found the daughter. And so I think the trial court's understanding of the facts and that comport with the Commonwealth's here in this posture on appeal, that it extended well beyond. I know that came up in cross-examination some, but I don't believe that it was really fleshed out in argument. I think that the trial court disposed of that in the Commonwealth's favor, that that was a blanket consent, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Honor, may I interject? I know you've been asking for comments from Mr. Gilbert. Did you mean Mr. Jones, or were you asking?
Mr. Jones, I'm sorry.
Okay, I was just making sure you weren't asking me a question.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mr. Jones, thank you. Are there any other questions from either Judge O'Brien or Judge Malvo?
No, not at this time.
Nothing from me. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Jones. You still have a bit of your rebuttal time, and we will come back to you. Now, Mr. Sanders, you may present your argument. You have 15 minutes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. May it please the court, I would start with a clear understanding of the standard of review in this case. And the standard of review, as stated by both Commonwealth and the is very similar, but I would go to first the standard of review of the facts of the case has always been for many years in Virginia, plainly wrong or without evidence to support it. And the findings of fact of the trial court and the necessary conclusions of law that arise from those findings of fact, because many times you have a conclusion that's both part law and part fact, but the facts of the case were that certain things were found, and as long as there's evidence to support the findings of the court, it should not be disturbed on appeal. And I believe the term is clear error in search and seizure cases, and we do not have clear error in this situation. Let me turn first to the issue of consent, although I do want to mention in passing that standing is an important consideration that has to be a threshold consideration that has to be considered by the court in deciding if we should even be here at all. But the main thing I would say about the standing issue is this is a room that Amanda's child was in, and I presume, and in fact it was described as Amanda's room, and the child was in a playpen, which I think was in an adjacent room, and the crib that that child sleeps in was right there. Now, Your Honors, I don't intend to condone presence of drugs and paraphernalia in the same room as a child in any way, shape, or form. That's another issue for perhaps another day. But I do say that a mother is going to be careful what is in a room that she uses in the tending of this child, especially when she's not allowed to spend the night with this child. I think there's ample evidence of standing, of an expectation of privacy in
this. Mr. Sanders, this is Judge Malvo. I hate to interrupt you, but let me ask you a quick question in terms of some of the facts that you've just indicated to us regarding the room. It's my understanding from the appendix that this is a room over which Amanda, one, did not sleep, she didn't reside in the house, and cousins would frequently utilize that room. Is that correct?
I think you're right about that, Judge Malvo. I think there were other people that did use that room. I think
just
the most
to make sure we were on the same page factually.
Yes, ma'am. And I would say this, Your Honors, that the Commonwealth theory of the case is that Amanda and others jointly possessed these precursors of meth, and it would seem to me the Commonwealth can't have it both ways. They can't approbate and reprobate. They can't say she doesn't have standing to challenge the search of the backpack, but we're going to use the materials in the backpack to try to convict her of a serious crime. That would be the summary, and of course I'll answer all the questions that the court might have about that. But we turn now to the consent that was allegedly given, and I would agree that the beginning of that consent was probably to look around for drugs and also to look for the people who were eventually found in a furtive place within the house and were brought out and handcuffed and that. I would suggest that Glenn is distinguishable, and it's distinguishable because at the moment Officer Potter searched the bag, according to Appendix 55, lines 18 through 20, his answer to the question, at that moment you knew it was not Amanda's bag, it wasn't Brenda's bag. He said, exactly. He agreed with it in toto. And there's no facts that directly contradict that concession, if you would, that statement, that admission by the agent for Commonwealth, that at the moment he is searching that backpack, and the shaving kit and the backpack all go together. It either rises or falls on their own. They're both together. The backpack is, in fact, was not something that he had any authority to search at that time. I would
to Mr. Jones's point that, let's assume for purposes of the question that apparent authority was presented in the lower court, and that's what he's arguing, that Brenda has a joint access to the bag and therefore can consent to the search. What is your response to that?
The apparent authority, if any, doesn't exist because he knew at the moment that Brenda was unable to give consent to the bag. And I admire the candor of the Assistant Attorney General who says the people weren't even there. They were on the porch, and after the search, Moore et al. Was asked the question. I thank Mr. Jones for that. And I would say that that takes that issue completely out of the case. It is no longer an operative fact of any importance. I would suggest that if we look at the White case and we have the two-prong test of the is it an expectation of privacy and is it something that the courts and society recognizes as reasonable, I would say that the room it was slightly disagree with Commonwealth as an aside, that it said the judge's decision was, I think that certainly under these circumstances, Brenda Collins had authority to allow officers in, conduct a search. And I think even to conduct a search of that room to an extent, I don't think it's even a close case as to whether or not they had authority to search inside that backpack. And I would respectfully suggest to the court that that authority, that lack of authority found by the trial court is supported in the record and should not be disturbed on appeal, and it means that there was no authority to consent to a search of the backpack or the shaving kit, because he did not know at the time what he was saying, what he did not realize he was searching. And Judge Dobson made another observation. He said it would have been a very simple matter to have gone and gotten a search warrant, and he repeats himself and says, and it would have been easy to get a search warrant based upon all of the totality of the circumstances. I would respectfully submit to the court that that is a finding of fact, and I would further say that the Fourth Amendment deems warrantless searches presumptively unreasonable, and you must have an exception. And if the Ross case cited by the Commonwealth here today is United States versus Ross, decided by the Supreme Court, that's an automobile search, and the question is whether the exigency of the automobile carries over to the containers that are in the trunk of the automobile. And the court said, no, we're not going to make a nice distinction in this situation. We're going to allow that warrantless search to happen. But I think the fact that the judge said, the circuit court said, very simple matter, easy to get. There was a number of officers, and there were more officers on the way. It would have been very easy to do the right thing and get the search warrant. They certainly had probable cause with the paraphernalia that was observed in the room by the people from social services, which started this whole event to occur. I also understand state police were on their way, so certainly the evidence was secure and no one was going to tamper with it or destroy it. And so that exigency does not exist. And furthermore, the Commonwealth doesn't contend that it exists. They never make that argument. So the question is, did Brenda Collins' general consent to search the house and to maybe in part search the room, does it extend to the container, the backpack, and I would suggest it does not, because Potter knew it was not Brenda's bag. So Brenda had no authority whatsoever, and had the trial judge ruled, it would have been plainly wrong on this record. I would finally state that the Miranda issue, which hasn't been extensively discussed, but let me discuss it and answer any questions the court might have about the Miranda issue. Miranda warnings were read. Judge Dotson found they were read. There was a question in the record. He resolved that, but that's not the end analysis, as the court knows, because the analysis is, was there a waiver? And it is settled law that...
May I interrupt you, please?
Sure.
This is Judge Chapin. I apologize, but in reference to the Miranda warnings, your client, Ms. Collins, the judge did make the ruling. been read on the porch but was read down in the car. But the question is, and perhaps I missed it, but did your client make any statements between the porch and the car? I mean, what is it that you are...
It wasn't clear on this record, but it sounded like Mr. Jones brought up that they asked on the porch, they asked all of the people, whose bag is it? And that would be a statement that would be suppressible under Miranda. But even if you did have Miranda read on the porch, there is no evidence of a waiver. And the law settled. You can't have a waiver of a constitutional right on an empty record. And there's no evidence of a waiver of those constitutional rights, either explicitly or implicitly. And therefore, I would suggest that the careful decision of Judge Dotson to say there is expectation of privacy, there was no authority to search the backpack and or the shavings and the shaving kit, and that the Miranda warnings, whether read on the porch or not, were certainly read in the car, and there was a waiver there, but there was no waiver found on the porch, and therefore that careful ruling is amply supported by the fact and should not be disturbed on appeal. I'm happy to answer any questions that the court has for me.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. This is Judge O'Brien. What are the statements from the porch that you contend should be suppressed?
I'm not sure the record ever revealed what was exactly said on the porch. I found that to be somewhat puzzling to me. But since it was raised in both, I figured there must be something that had been disclosed on discovery but had not been disclosed in the court.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Sanders?
Nothing from me.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Sanders. Mr.
Thank you, ma'am.
I believe you still have, Mr. Jones, almost 2 minutes, almost. A rebuttal if you desire to use it. Mr. Jones?
Your Honor, I apologize. I had muted my handset. can you hear me?
Almost 2 minutes of rebuttal time if you desire to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the Court. The first thing that I would address is that the Collins has suggested repeatedly that Brenda's authority over the bag depends on her ownership of the bag, and that when she disclaimed ownership, that divested her of any authority to consent to a search of it. But the law says that her access and control over the backpack is dispositive of her authority. Here, she had access and control over the room, and the court appropriately found that she did. Even if it said to a limited extent, it's not clear what limited extent that is. The law doesn't seem to make those sorts of distinctions. And so her authority necessarily extended to this nondescript backpack. And I would note that a contrary holding would leave homeowners without the authority to consent to a search of an item if the ownership of the item on their property is ambiguous or unknown. And that would be an absurd rule of law to try to enforce. And so here, where there's just an unclaimed bag on her property, whether she owns it or not, she has access and control over it. So the court erred by finding that she didn't have authority over it. The ability to get a warrant is irrelevant where we're not relying on exigency. This is a consent search. So it's kind of a red herring to say that they could have gotten a warrant. And then the idea that Ross only applies to exigent automobile searches, I think, is dispelled by the text of Ross itself. It says that all lawful searches is what it's addressing with that language that the Commonwealth noted. And I would...
Mr. Jones, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but your time has expired. Are there any questions for Mr. Jones based upon his rebuttal argument?
Nothing for me, thank you.
Nothing for me either.
Hearing none... Then, counsel, I will thank you for proceeding today by teleconference, and I will tell you that we will conclude this proceeding, and we will go into our conference. And again, thank and I hope that both of you have a nice remainder of the summer. Thank you.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.